Data Bytes. Hi everyone, welcome to another exciting episode on the Denodo Data Bytes series. I'm your host Neha, and let's welcome our guest this week for the second time on our show, Dominic Sartorio, VP of Product Marketing here at Denodo. Dominic is a product leader with extensive experience in the data space, including analytics, data governance and integration, data security, data cloud, and related infrastructure software. Glad to have you back on the show, Dominic. So before we get started on understanding data anti-gravity and how organizations need to centralize their semantic layer and not their data, can you give our new listeners a quick introduction about your background in the data management space?
Yeah, definitely. And thanks again for having me. So while I'm fairly new to Denodo, joined a few months ago, been in the data management space for a long time, over 20 years. Mostly product leadership roles. I've also had product marketing roles and engineering roles at different companies, such as Informatica and Protegrity and some others. And definitely have seen a full picture of how the data management space has evolved over the years, and including the rise of big data and transition to the cloud and all that. So it's really been a fascinating journey in seeing how data management has evolved over the years.
Wonderful to hear. Thank you, Dominic. So jumping right into our conversation today, we hear a lot from the industry about data gravity. So can you describe what this is and why it matters?
Yeah, definitely. So data gravity refers to the sunk cost, all the work that goes into getting data consolidated into a data lake or a data warehouse. And imagine all the time and effort it takes to build those data pipelines and those ETL jobs or those replications that you had to put in place, as well as the data quality rules and other rules you need to do to cleanse that data and make sure it's relevant, make sure it's well-governed. So it takes a lot of time and effort to take data that may be scattered across the organization and then consolidate it, clean it, and make it ready for use for whoever its downstream users are, analysts or whoever else it may be. That we call that data gravity because it feels heavy, right? It's like, wow, I invested all this time to get all this data consolidated and cleaned. Let's say a traditional on-premise data warehouse. And it becomes a problem then when an organization says, okay, we've had this legacy on-premise data warehouse and now we want to move it to the cloud. And the fear is, okay, now I have to repeat all that effort all over again. I have to rebuild all those data pipelines, rebuild all those rules. It feels heavy, right? So hence the term data gravity. So it's something that customers definitely don't like. You know, they want to be more nimble and agile. They want to be able to take advantage of the latest technologies that may do better analytics, or whether it's Gen AI or something else. They want to adopt the cloud. But this notion of data gravity, the sunk cost that went into getting data consolidated and prepared in this one place over here, and I can't just copy and paste it over there. I have to repeat a lot of that work. So it means the data is just kind of stuck there. It's heavy and it's just sitting where it used to be. Vendors, on the other hand, many of them, they won't admit it, but they may like data gravity. They want data to be sticky. They want data to be sitting in their own product or in their own environment and have it be hard to get out, because then, you know, that becomes a loyal customer. But it's something that customers abhor. They want to be more nimble and agile, but this whole idea of the sunk cost, consolidating and prepping data in one place as being something that's not repeatable, easily repeatable somewhere else is a headwind for them.
Very interesting. So can you explain, discussing this a bit more, so can you explain why organizations need to centralize their semantic layer and not their data, and how this relates to data anti-gravity?
Yeah, so it's what's fascinating is when I've had a lot of conversations with many enterprises over the years, and they bring up data gravity and they say, yeah, I've had this on-premise data warehouse. I want to move to the cloud. And I have to reconsolidate all that data in the cloud. Or it may have been one cloud data source and they want to adopt, say, moving from a data warehouse to a data lake paradigm. So they have to move the data from one vendor's cloud environment to another, same problem. But what I find is many enterprise customers I've talked to, they have this impression in their minds that they have to move the data. They actually move the actual physical data. And honestly, this is what we as an industry have told our customers over the many years and decades, where if you want to take advantage of the latest and greatest analytic engines or latest and greatest data technologies, you have to move the data there. So it's a natural way for people to think, but this is wrong thinking. It's unfortunate, because there is a much better way. But you know, you have to kind of coach customers to unthink the assumptions that they've made over the years, that you have to move your physical data somewhere, and you have to rebuild those data pipelines and redo all your data quality and governance rules in that new environment, in order to take advantage of that new environment. It's wrong thinking. So I'm starting to use tagline-y or meme kinds of words like anti-gravity to kind of wake people up and say, why is he calling this anti-gravity? What does he mean by that, right? To at least kind of open their minds to the possibility that there's a different way of thinking about this. And the different way of thinking about this is through logical data management, what Denodo does. Don't have to physically move all that data. You can keep it where it is. And let the power of data virtualization, so the Denodo platform, be smart about pulling the data that's needed to serve a specific use case or be able to deliver the results set for specific queries from those disparate data sources. Let the logical data platform run that query in a distributed way, optimize it so that it performs and can run at low cost, cache some of it if you must, but that itself is automated. It's not like a human being had to spend a lot of time to build that like it's a pipeline or anything. And then you short circuit all the time it would have taken you to physically move that data somewhere else. And so with Denodo, then you get the best of both worlds. You get the ability to have fast access to your data without having to have moved it somewhere to be able to take advantage of it. You can keep the data where it is. And you can also take advantage of all the query optimizations, the performance, the intelligence we have under the covers to make sure that the data set that comes back to you is in fact well governed and good quality and privacy compliance is enforced and things like that. So all the reasons where you may have assumed I need to move the data to take advantage of all those things, you don't really have to move the data anymore. So calling it anti-gravity is a way to kind of get folks to think, wait a minute, do I have a false assumption here? Is there another way of thinking about it? You know, I found it as an effective way to open people's minds to the possibility that you can be a lot more agile and you can be just as powerful and getting data in the hands of all your users without having to incur all of that sunk cost before even getting there.
That's great. That's wonderful to hear, Dominic. So we've discussed this a bit before, where you mentioned data gravity is not very beneficial to customers, right? So in what ways is data gravity a problem for them, and what can organizations do about it?
Yeah, so talked about one of them already. It was just the time and effort it takes to build data pipelines and ETL jobs, whatever else you need to do to move the data. But there's another aspect as well, which personally I find this a little more insidious. But because once you've spent all that time to get your data running on a single data platform, you're kind of at the mercy of that vendor, right? So whatever compute costs you're incurring, storage or ingress egress costs of those data pipelines feeding that data platform, you're kind of at the mercy of that vendor and how they choose to price and how much visibility you're getting on your compute costs or lack of visibility for that matter. We've had a lot of Denodo customers say before they adopted Denodo, they would continually be surprised by the bill they get every month from their cloud data platform vendor of choice. And for the vendor, it's great, right? That customer is kind of locked in because of data gravity. They can't move easily. So they're kind of stuck there. What are they going to do? Just not use their data anymore? So of course, they're going to keep using the platform. So I find that to be a little more insidious because, you know, this is an area where vendor and customer are not on the same page, right? And as I've seen in this industry over the years, whenever you have a situation where vendor and customer are not aligned, that's a market inefficiency, and it always results in a lot of friction and customers not getting all the benefit that they could possibly get out of an asset, in this case, their data. So I think not only is anti-gravity a different way of thinking, the fact that, hey, you don't have to move all your data, you don't have to deal with data gravity, keep the data where it is, but you can still get all the benefits. You can make everybody in your organization smarter through data by giving them that single logical interface. And you can do it more cost effectively. You know, let Denodo be the engine that determines how do you optimize that query, what's the most cost effective way to run it. So that way you get more cost control back in the hands of the customer. But yeah, it drives me crazy whenever I see vendors saying, oh, to get the maximum use of your data so that your business has one place to go for all your data, you got to consolidate all your data physically in our environment. And that's just not true. And it's very self-serving. Far better to say, look, you got data sitting in different places, different engines, different applications that are fit for purpose for specific things. But when you do need to have a single consolidated view of that data for all your business users, use a logical platform to do that. You don't incur that data gravity. You don't spend all the time to consolidate the data physically, and you get more cost control. You leverage the power of Denodo to optimize your queries and manage your workload much more effectively. So those are really the problems of data gravity for the customers. It's not just the time and effort to consolidate data, but also they start losing control of the cost they incur, and they're really at the mercy of a given vendor. So by adopting anti-gravity principles and using a logical data platform like Denodo, you solve for both, right? So you give that unified view to the business that much faster, you can respond to their needs that much faster, and you put more control back in the hands of customers in terms of costs and performance and those kinds of things.
Makes perfect sense. Thanks, Dominic. So we have kind of discussed the problem area and also gone over the solution a bit. But you know, it is difficult for organizations to move away from already existing systems, right? So what are some practical steps organizations can take to move away from data gravity? How and where can they get started?
Yeah, like anything, big bang doesn't work. But start where it's where you see the there's most obvious need or the most obvious value. A very common one, not the only one, but a very common starting point that I've seen is customer data. So, and even if you had consolidated all your customer data into a single data warehouse against which you do all your customer analytics, most use cases that depend on customer data are going to be operational in nature, right? It's not enough to be able to query customer data historically, but I'm on the phone with an angry customer right now, right? Or I'm trying to optimize for sales in this particular store or for this customer demographic right now. So I really do need to get my hands on a near real-time up-to-date data set. So inevitably, even if you already consolidated all your data in a given data warehouse or data lake, you're going to have more up-to-date snapshots of that data sitting in your CRM, like sitting in your Salesforce or your Marketo or wherever else you might have customer and prospect data. And you do want to provide those end users who have those use cases with a single unified view. So that's a very common and a very easy place to start, to build a single virtual view that encapsulates all of your customer data, both the historical, analytical, and your real-time, up-to-date transactional data, and have it available in one unified view. And those are usually pretty easy to generate because your customer data is probably already fairly well governed and you've got good privacy and quality rules around it. So very easy to get started there. And then you can see, okay, what is that incremental benefit of using a virtual view compared to always having to consolidate the physical data underneath before you make that data available to the business. And pretty quickly, I've seen our customers realize, wow, I can get the right data available to my customers, that single unified view, in hours or days. And it used to take me weeks because it would take weeks to to build that ETL job, or I can respond to feedback from the business that much faster. Like if they say, okay, this data set isn't quite what I need, you're missing this field, or I need also need to add from this other data source over there, you can do it that much more quickly. So those benefits of speed are usually recognizable very, very quickly and in a measurable way. And then once you've established, okay, for this one use case where it's pretty simple and it's pretty obvious that we need to do it, now we've measured the benefits, then you can go and expand to other use cases, other data sets, other business functions who may have a similar challenge, but maybe wasn't as obvious from the beginning. But then when you see, okay, for this customer-facing data set over there, we're able to measure the speed and agility benefits of using a virtual approach. And then, you know, it's easier to justify than doing the same with another use case elsewhere in the business.
Thanks, Dominic. So we've gone through a few use cases and examples from our, you know, like partners and customers who have maybe, you know, started thinking about this concept of anti-data gravity. But would you like to highlight any particular use case where, you know, a customer or a partner they have benefited by moving away from this data gravity concept and, you know, they have started using logical data management as a solution?
Absolutely. So there's one great customer example I can give. Actually, not sure if they're publicly referenceable, so I'll refer to them without naming the name. But this use case really struck me because it wasn't just about speed and agility, you know, of getting data in front of users, but it was really about speed to innovation. You know, how fast could they take advantage of new business opportunity? You know, so this particular customer, they're a telco, and they operate call centers on behalf of small business, very data intensive, right? Because you're always, for every customer call that comes in to their small business customers, they capture that, they track that. So each of those calls, you know, there's voice records, there's time of day, and then you can correlate that to data about the customer themselves, their demographics. So they're sitting on a gold mine of data that then itself is valuable to their small business customers, and they use that for their own customer engagement analytics. Well, one day, one of their business sponsors had an idea, and they said, look, many of our small business customers are themselves running e-commerce storefronts on Shopify, right? They themselves run their business on Shopify. What about if we correlated Shopify's data, like all the transaction data and, you know, e-commerce data that Shopify would have, with the call center data that we have, and that way we can provide our small business customers with a great 360. You're seeing customers' e-commerce behavior, transactions, returns, and so on with their call center behavior, and you get a much broader and more informative picture. So our champion there, who's the senior leader of enterprise data in this telco, thought, you know, that's a really great idea. And who knows what the possibilities are, what innovation is possible if you're able to bring those two data sets together. Well, if they were to do an effort to consolidate Shopify's data in with their own call center data warehouse first, that project would have taken weeks to build that data pipeline, do the ETL, do the join, clean the data and all that, you know, everything that leads to data gravity. But they were able to prototype this on Denodo in just 3 hours. So in the same day that somebody in the business had this idea, they had a running prototype and were able to demo it back to the business sponsor who had this idea. And they were like, wow, this is really cool. We're gonna do this. Let's go to market with this. But within the same day, you're able to prove whether an innovative idea could work or not. So data gravity isn't just a problem of the time it takes to get somewhere, or, you know, the cost not being under your control and so on, but it's really about innovation. How fast do you want to enable your business to innovate with data? You know, how responsive do you want your business to be if there are changes going on in the marketplace? How great would it have been for many companies to have same day visibility to new data sets, say in March 2020 when the pandemic was getting started and you had to see in real time how it was affecting your customers? So that kind of time to innovation can really help organizations thrive and be more competitive as a result of that and just serve their customers that much better. But it requires that mindset change where data gravity is not a necessity. You don't have to physically consolidate your data all the time. You can just virtually join your data from wherever it is. And that's a much faster way of engaging with the business, giving them the data they need, proving new ideas, and, you know, ultimately innovating and serving your customers better.
Definitely. And this was a very wonderful example, Dominic. Thank you for sharing. And thank you for joining us for this episode as well. Before we wrap up very quickly, I just wanted to do the quick Q&A round with you that we did last time as well. So are you ready to get started?
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfect. So so what are some educational qualifications or specializations you would recommend for newcomers to advance in the field of product marketing?
Yeah, really good question. And, you know, back in the old days when I got started, I would have said, you know, get a communication degree or get a journalism degree, you know, get really good at writing, at speaking, because those are the traditional ways of reaching your target customers is through traditional print and broadcast media and learning the techniques of communicating effectively through those channels. Now, I mean, that it's not that that is not important anymore. Those still are channels to go to market. But so many prospective buyers out there now do their own homework, do their own research online. They Google it, they go to social media, they go to online communities, and want to do their own homework before they want to actually engage with a sales team, you know, or actually transact with a company, with a vendor. So additional skill sets are needed. You need to be savvy with social media. You need to be savvy with, you know, how to use actually any kind of digital media. It could be web, could be social, blogging, and anything like that is helpful to have. And finally, I'm finding product marketing has evolved. So it's itself becoming a very data-driven job, right? You before you launch any new campaign or you try out any new kind of messaging that you want to bring to market, you want to do some analytics on your customer base, the demographics, the patterns of their behavior and how they responded to previous campaigns. So it is a job where you need to be your own data analyst. So you yourself being data savvy and having some good data analytics skill sets, and I don't mean just Excel, but BI tools and, you know, using the analytic tools that come in with products like Salesforce and so on, I think are equally critical. So it's good to have like a combination of talents, as being effective and being a good writer, being a good communicator, being good at speaking, but then also knowing how to translate that into the digital sphere, social media, web, and other online forms of communicating. And then finally, you know, you yourself have to be data driven, getting being able to analyze through data the feedback you're getting from the market to different campaigns you're running and different things you're communicating. So you can learn from that and then be more effective as you move along. So those three skill sets, I think, are pretty important to be a good product marketer these days.
Wonderful. I think you already kind of answered a bit of my next question as well. I was just going to ask you, what are some skill sets needed to be successful in your role? And I think you already mentioned, which would be like a good balance between marketing knowledge or communication-based skill set along with an interest in the industry that you want to work in this case, which is data, right? Anything else you would like to add here?
Well, actually, that last point is a good point you just made. You know, when I said product marketing is data driven, I think that's true regardless of the industry you're a product marketer in. You know, you could be doing traditional consumer packaged goods or something, you know, something 20th century, but it's still very data driven what you have to do. So I think based on the way you asked the question, I would add a fourth thing. Certainly, you need to understand your buyer, right? The persona. Who are they? What motivates them? What you know, how do they make decisions, right? And that usually requires a good understanding of their business, their market. right? So here at Denodo, we're in the process of verticalizing. And so this is a conversation we're actively having across our sales and marketing organizations, right? We're not just marketing to chief data officers anymore, but how does a chief data officer for a big bank think and act differently from the chief data officer in the energy industry or for a telco? So you do kind of need to have a good appreciation. And the best way to do that is to talk to them. So, you know, you need to be a good conversationalist, you know, be able to engage with those personas, whether you meet them in conferences or you're talking to them as just your own one-to-one interactions. You do need to understand your buyer persona, you know, and the industry they're operating in. So I would add that fourth one. So the four skill sets are: you need to be a good communicator, both writing and speaking. You need to be good translating that to the digital sphere, social and web, et cetera. Thirdly, you need to be data-driven. You be a good analyst because inevitably the market feedback you need is going to be represented in data somehow, customer demographics and so on. So you need to be a good analyst to guide your next steps. And you need to understand your buyer and their business and the industry that they're operating in. So there's a lot there, but it's all learnable. So I think the final and maybe most important skill set anybody can have is having the mindset of always learning, always being curious and always asking questions, because that's really the most effective way to learn, right? It's not like you can just go take a class somewhere and you magically know all of this. You know, I guess you could put together a good four-year college degree that includes all of this stuff, but you're always going to be learning on the job as well. So always being curious and asking good questions, and you're going to learn as you go and become more effective that way.
Correct. Very true. Very true. Thank you so much, Dominic. This was a wonderful session, and I had great fun discussing everything related to data and to gravity today.
Great. Thank you for having me.
And a quick message to our listeners: if you enjoyed this episode, please head over to denodo.com/podcast to find out more resources on all things data.